Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and...
Jeff McClure.
This is definitely one of those extra exciting days as we come about our technical difficulties that seem to confound the most brilliant of people and us as well. So we are here. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure. And on the line with me, I have...
Jeff McClure.
Together, we are the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are bald, and we are bearded, and we talk about economics, personal finance, macroeconomics, completely impersonal finance, stuff like that. You know, the really exciting stuff that every five-year-old wants to listen to on a Saturday morning. That is us. So... before we get started with what we're doing, we're going to get started with some other things that we're not doing. Well, we are doing. They're disclosures. We have to do them, but all right, so let's just do them. The Personal Wealth Coach is not just the name of this radio program podcast. It is also the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. That's not a coincidence that people that are speaking on the radio, Jeff and Jake, the bald duo, are the principals of that firm. Why do I have to say this? Because the SEC says we have to say it. Because if you're listening to this and you hear us say something absolutely absurd, no, scratch that, we say a lot of absurd things, absolutely illegal, then you can contact them and tell them all about it. They're the ones to talk to. They don't, just because our firm is registered with them, they don't give us any form of attaboys, thumbs ups, approval. If you're seeking a daddy complex, you don't go to the SEC. Just because we're registered with the SEC to give fiduciary advice doesn't mean we can give fiduciary advice on the air. The advice that we give on the air, what is fiduciary? In the best interest of the client. Well, we don't even know who's listening to us, if anybody is listening to us at the moment. So we can't give advice to the people that we don't know are there, because there are other people that we don't know are there, presumably. Could be nobody's listening. That's a possibility as well. And if that's the case, then it wouldn't be private advice. So we can't give advice on the air. Therefore, this program is educational in nature. Hopefully, we will be teaching stuff. We don't pay for the program, nor are we paid for it. But at the same time, we do advertise on the studio, KTEM 1400. We advertise on the studio, and the studio advertises for this radio program. We advertise for this radio program. That is, we pay actually discounted market rates for that. So there's only one disclosure left. Would you like to take it?
Well, I can say that the information we provide in this educational radio program has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of said information.
We do, however, guarantee the inaccuracy and incompleteness of all unsaid information until it's said, and then we don't guarantee anything. There. So
now we can also, there's another disclosure we probably ought to give.
What's that?
The future is always uncertain.
Oh, man. Is that a disclosure? Are we opening up about that? Do people doubt that?
Well, I think a lot of people don't doubt it at all. They doubt it. Well, they doubt it completely. They believe that somebody can predict the future, because when I read particularly financial literature, Wall Street Journal, any place, the majority of stories about the market on most days are about what it's going to do in the future, stating it very distinctly, like, here's what's going to happen.
That's true. I think people wish to hear the prognostications and predictions, especially if they're wrong. But right, they will treat it like it's right, even if someone has a great history of being wrong. If you're occasionally right, then you get listened to. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And
those are our disclosures.
We're not syndicated. We're not syndicated across the country, because we don't predict what the market is going to do next year, 5 years from now, 3 months from now. And as a result, we never have the opportunity to be dead right on one time.
I can become famous
for many years.
I'm going to make a prediction right now.
What's that?
I'm going out on a limb here, because things could occur to completely disrupt this prediction. But my prediction is that the market will open on Monday morning and trade in its normal business hours. How's that?
I will, you need to put some caveats on that.
Now, presuming that Monday is an Eastern time in the United States rather than Monday in Asia in normal market trading time. So we got to talk about which market we're talking about as well.
You got to start. However, you need to throw in, occasionally the market doesn't open on a weekday.
That's true.
Unexpectedly, other than holidays, unexpectedly, the market doesn't open on certain days. Right after 9/11, for example, the market was closed for several days.
It was closed for several weeks. Just disappeared. It's
right.
Amazing.
And so there have been major international incidents that have caused the market to close.
Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to be nuts. What's that? I'm going to remove all the caveat. And I could be totally wrong. That's the only caveat, that the market is going to open on Monday morning.
That makes sense.
There you go. All right. So what happened in the market this week, speaking of the market being open?
Well, it went up and it went down and then it closed and everybody went home for the weekend.
Oh, well, that's a reasonable outcome for the market. And in other news, across the weather this week, we've had rain. Across the weather this week, we've had rain and dryness. And now on to the next subject, sports. There were games played this week, and on to the next subject, crime. There were crimes committed this week and arrests made.
Yeah.
Now we're done with the news and on to the next subject.
Well, the S&P 500 stock index is the primary indicator we use to trace what the stock market is doing or not doing on a given day. Not that it's really doing anything, but at least the valuations that are being assigned to it. And actually, into Tuesday, it went up above 4,100, which sort of tracked what it's done recently as it continued to rise. And then Wednesday, the Federal Reserve had its press conference.
Yep.
And the reason it went up on Tuesday is because the Consumer Price Index was released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the Department of Labor, one of our favorite government organizations. And it showed that inflation came in actually substantially lower than had been anticipated. Now, year-over-year inflation still was up above 7%, but monthly inflation is only running along at 0.1% and has been for a couple of months now. That made the people who do daily trading or short-term trading in the stock market relatively happy because they concluded that that meant the Federal Reserve would not raise interest rates as far or perhaps as long as they had previously suspected, because if inflation appears to be coming under control very nicely, and it does, the Federal Reserve would not raise rates so much. And if they didn't raise rates so much, the probability of having earnings fall and there being a recession next year drops pretty dramatically. So they were all very happy and the market started up. And then came the press conference following the Federal Reserve meeting where Chairman Powell said, nope, we are going to raise interest rates higher, longer than you can imagine. And it caused a lot of confusion and the market started falling. It didn't fall that much, though. It was down 2.08% for the week, which obviously, if you multiply that by 52,
that's a lot.
That means that a year from now at that rate, we wouldn't have a market.
But on a normal Fed meeting week where they announce a rate hike, we've seen just this year some much more significant drops on those rates. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about it is, at least from my perspective, is that it is now distinctly higher than it was. It's like 7.53% higher than it was in mid-October, the market is. And if there's all that much bad news out there, why did things look worse in mid-October than they do now? And the answer is they really don't look that much worse. There was a lot of speculation, and we can go into that in more detail later in the program. A lot of speculation went around that perhaps because the Consumer Price Index did not come out until the meeting was almost over at the Federal Reserve by the time the Consumer Price Index came out. It's possible that they were all closeted in there and they said, don't bother us, we need to discuss some serious stuff. And so they didn't actually look at the Consumer Price Index that came out that showed inflation had fallen to lower levels. That was kind of a thought. But reading Chairman Powell's comments, sort of interesting. He focused hard on one section of the economy that he wants to slow down, and he thinks is a severe danger to the total economy and the stability of the dollar, which is their number one priority. And that is not just the services sector. Prices, we can go into that in more detail in the rest of the program, but prices in the goods sector are actually falling. Prices in the service sector, some parts of the service sector are not falling very fast, are falling, are stable. But the labor intensive areas of the service side of our economy are seeing dramatic increases in wages, like 10%, 15% a year. The overall wages are going up at about 6 or 7% a year. Not because everybody's wages are going up, but because over in the labor-intensive services side, what's labor-intensive? I'll give you an example. When you go to a restaurant, that's labor-intensive. There's a lot of people involved in serving you, in preparing and serving you food on a timely basis. That is the area, that is one of the areas where wages are going up very fast. Why is it going up very fast? Because the employers are having a very hard time finding anybody to work there. In healthcare, wages are going up very, very fast. This was in Great Britain rather than in the United States, but there was a comment by a nurse who left being a nurse and went to be a barista at Starbucks. The nurse, who was a man, said, I get paid more as a barista than I was getting paid as a registered nurse.
It's technically a barista.
Barista?
Yeah, barista. It's like saying bravo for a woman.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, the barista, I'll take your word for it. Whatever, the guy who pumps the coffee.
Pumps the gas into your coffee. Right. Got it.
The registered nurse was getting paid more. Now, this was in the United Kingdom, where nurses went on strike this week. But that is true across the board. In the labor-intensive areas of our economy, we are seeing wages go up dramatically. Why are they going up dramatically? Because it's hard to find people to do that work. It's really hard to find people to do that work. Why is it hard to find people to do that work? Because there are good-paying technical jobs in a lot of places, and we're just not having as many people enter in at the bottom of the chain as we used to. We just don't have a lot of people coming on board who want to do relatively low wage service work. And if you've tried to find a plumber or a carpenter or somebody to fix your house recently, you see that that's going on there too. People have become educated. They like the idea of working in a stable environment where they don't have to run around a lot in front of a computer. And they get paid more to do that in most cases than they do to work as a waiter or waitress. The pandemic sort of messed that up. But that's what Chairman Powell focused on. What's it got to do with the markets? Well, he says we've got to get that area of the economy under control. We've got to reduce the demand for high work-intensive, labor-intensive service areas to bring that rise in wages down to something sustainable, or inflation will just take off again. And his concern was that if the Federal Reserve leaves interest rates as they are, which are, by the way, sort of negative right now because inflation is higher than the short-term interest rates, then people will borrow a lot of money and do a lot of expansion, and people hire more people, and the more people will make a lot more money, and they will buy more stuff and more services, and inflation will continue to go. That's the theory. I don't necessarily think he's correct, although I really hesitate to argue with the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Anyway, so the market was down 2.08%. Is it a disaster? No. Is it bad? Not particularly. So let's put that in perspective. From early January, the Standard Poor's 500 stock index is now down 19.63%, or almost to a bear market level. But as recently as mid-October, as I mentioned, from there, it's up 7.53. If we go back to the market bottom in 2020, which some of us really old people can remember all the way back about 2.5 years ago, the market is up 72.18%. And if we go back to 3 years ago, just before the pandemic, it's up 24%. The market has risen 24% in 3 years. That is good. That is really, really, really good. That's over 7% a year. And yet the surveys across the board indicate that investors think the market is down. That is backwards, folks. If you're a trader, the market's down. If you're an investor, the market is up. That's the reality of where we are. We also follow the CRSP Midcap Value Index. And for those of you who are not familiar with that, the Standard & Poor's 500 Stock Index is primarily made up, it's driven by large capitalization, big growth-oriented companies, where the stock is priced according to the expected earnings growth in the company 3 to 5 years from now. So those prices tend, those price-to-earnings ratios in those companies tend to be relatively high. Those are called growth stocks. At the other end of the spectrum in the S&P 500, since there are no small stocks in the S&P 500, is the mid-cap value portion of the S&P 500. So we follow a mid-cap value index and see what that is saying too. The S&P 500, that was down about 2.05%, the CRSP mid-cap value index. It closed at 2330.84. It also continued to hold up relatively well for the year. It's only down 10.26% for the year. So rough, the mid-cap value side of the market is down about half as much as the S&P 500. And there's a really good reason for that. The really big tech stocks like Meta have taken a real beating this year and are still down relatively. Tesla is down a lot. I don't remember exactly where it was, but it's I think I saw a 44% drop in it at one point this week. But the big famous name high growth stocks are taking a beating, and it's keeping the S&P 500 down. Another couple of things that we follow the bond market, and we specifically follow the 10-year U.S. Treasury note as the benchmark, because it is a benchmark.
I'll give you a year-to-date number for Tesla, if you wish.
What's that? Sure.
It's down 57.35%.
Wow.
Yeah. that's definitely a wow.
That's impressive. That is really impressive. We could even talk about that if you'd like. why do we mention that? Because if you're an investor and you're like me and you're plodding along, buying a diversified, relatively conservative, relatively reasonable portfolio, and you see Tesla and Meta.
Meta's down 65% year to date.
You see, over the last several years, you've seen these stocks take off and double and triple and just do amazing things. Well, there's a backside to that. And we're seeing it now. And that's the reason the S&P 500 is not doing that well. The mainstream of the country in many ways is reflected in the value indices. And they're down about 10%, which is fairly reasonable, all things considered. The large growth companies, the really ones that really made a lot of money and did a lot of things and we have a lot of hope for, are getting smashed pretty badly. So let's move on to the bond market. Now, if the stock market dropped in the latter part of the week, and it did, because the traders on the stock market are expecting higher interest rates than they anticipated, and that's what they said, if we assume that the traders are telling the truth in mass, and I think they probably are about what they believe, that interest rates, that they came to the conclusion late in the week that interest rates are going to rise higher, faster than they thought, and that's why the stocks went down, then we would expect to see the yield rise on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note because it reflects what's going on in the stock market. Well, when the lower consumer price index figures came out and the bond market dropped, interest rates went up. When the yield goes up in the bond market, by the way, the value of bonds go down. I know that's backwards and it's hard to get your mind around, but the fact is if you see yields rising, it means bonds are falling. So the bond market went down in value and up in yield. Why? Well, because the lower CPI, it went the other way, actually. The interest rates dropped, the bond market went up on Tuesday. And so we would expect once the Fed came out and said, we're going to raise rates higher, longer than you think, the bond market would have dropped and interest rates would have gone up on the 10-year treasury. But they didn't. They didn't. They stayed pretty much the same. It closed out at the end of the week at 3.48%, roughly 3.5%, where it's been for some time.
Yeah, yeah, but that is 0.04% higher than it was the day before. 0.04%. That's a lot of zeros.
I don't think that's significant. That's not what's called noise.
That's a noise. Yeah. Yeah.
That's just noise. That's not a movement. Anyway, so the bond market traders are thinking, here's what's going to happen. Interest rates aren't going to go up as much as we thought. The stock market traders are saying, here's what happened. Interest rates are going to go up a lot more than we thought. which goes back to our disclosure a little earlier about the future. Not only is the future uncertain, apparently bond market traders and stock market traders have a very significant difference in what they think is going to happen in the future in interest rates. So it gets pretty interesting. Now, we also follow the interest rate treasury yield curve. Why do we follow the treasury yield curve? Because when short-term interest rates are higher than long-term interest rates, historically, it has indicated a high probability of a recession in the works.
Yeah. And then the yield curve's been inverted since July 5th.
And it is the most inverted right now that in my 50 years of observing such things, I have ever seen it. 40 years as a professional, I've never seen this inverted a yield curve. But it's there. It's inverted. And it either means we're going to, it means nothing. It means we're going to have a mild recession or we're not going to have a recession. And there are plenty of voices that will clearly state with certainty, it means one of those three things.
Yes.
Absolute certainty.
And the often wrong, never in doubt is usually right. the correct terms here.
Another thing we follow is West Texas Intermediate crude oil. By the way, the 6 month Treasury bill right now is the highest yielding one out there. If you're interested in getting high yield, it's yielding 4.68%. Now you'd only get half of that because it matures in 6 months, but that's the annualized yield of the 6 month Treasury bill right now, which is pretty impressive too. Anyway, West Texas Intermediate crude, which is another indicator we follow. It rose about 4.25% to $74.50 per barrel. Now, again, there's something going on here. Supply has not changed that much in 6 months. Now, people were scared 6 months ago that we were going to lose a lot of supply because of the invasion of Ukraine. But 6 months ago, WTI, which is what we call West Texas Intermediate, was trading at $120 a barrel. A month ago, it was at $90 a barrel. Now it's at $74.50 a barrel. What does that mean? It indicates that globally, the demand for oil is probably going to decline over the next 6 months or so, because that's how far out these things look. It's the futures market we're actually quoting for the oil, and it's the short-term futures market,
You said something earlier that I need to remind you about. You said the future is uncertain. So how is it that we can look at the prices of futures oil and have certainty?
Mm-hmm. Well, we can. You can buy a contract right now that says in so many days, you are obligated to take delivery of oil at $74.50 a barrel. It's actually 30 days. And the person who sold the contract says they're obligated to charge you $74.50 and you're obligated to pay $74.50. That's a contract. And if you don't believe that you trade, you deal in futures contracts, if you have a mortgage, if you have a car loan, that's a futures contract. You have agreed to pay so much money per month for a period of time, and they have agreed to only charge you so much money per month for a period of time in exchange for your future ownership of your house or the car. That's a futures contract. But the futures contracts trade back and forth. People buy initially, they sell a futures contract on corn or oil or something, put it on the open market, and somebody buys it and says, I'll agree to pay you this much, this month, this far in the future. And then they can sell the contract. And the contracts get sold around in various places and at various prices. And that indicates what people who are interested in buying oil over the next month think the price of oil will be 30 days from now, which is what we quote when we quote the price of oil, because the spot market is all over the place.
Well, you have to be
what you're paying right now.
When you're in an oil market, don't ever wear white, because it's a spot market and you're going to get oil.
Oh, you're getting bad.
I mean, it's true. And there's a level of truth in that pun that makes it more than just a pun.
Well, I think there is a good consensus among the people who have skin in the game, who are economically involved, that we are going into a global recession. There's really very little question about that right now, that in the next year there will be a global recession. The question that's practical to our listeners in the United States particularly is, will there be a domestic recession in the United States? And that's a maybe. Some of the more astute at least historically, have been accurate type forecasters are saying there is at least a 50% chance that we will not go into a recession. And there is probably a 70% chance that if we do go into a recession, it will be mild. And you really won't notice it in Texas if you're living in Texas. Some places, there are places right now that are already in a recession if you want to look very carefully in the economy of the United States. Commercial office buildings in New York City, the prices have dropped rather significantly for commercial office buildings. And anybody who's heavily invested in commercial office buildings in New York City is probably not real happy right now. And there's a reason for that. The demand has dropped. Why is the demand dropped? Because a lot of people are still working from home and will continue to work from home and are not going back to the office, which means when the leases are running out for the companies that have these blocks of offices rented in high-rise buildings, in many cases, they're not renewing their leases and they can't find anybody to take the lease, which means there's a lot of empty offices. Does that mean you should bail out of real estate? You just need to be kind of careful where you're invested in real estate, because there's some real estate in rising interest rate periods. Real estate takes a hit. It's just the reality. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be in real estate. You should be careful where you are in real estate. Diversification is important. And that's the markets.
Well done. Appreciate that. So we've got a lot to talk about today. We had a week where the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, and the Federal Reserve all decided that they were interested in raising rates, interest rates, by 0.5%. So everybody did. They all said, well, I'm interested in that as well. And so we had three major banks raise interest rates by 0.5%. And that caused the market to be shocked again. This is one of those things that I will never stop being amazed by. Because the Federal Reserve has been saying since its last meeting, and there's no doubt about this. This was November 1st and 2nd was its last meeting, and they've been saying consistently across the board and every news conference of every governor that they're going to be raising rates 0.5%. And yet, the day that it occurs, everyone is still shocked, which is intensely amusing to me because they've done this now. We go back to when they first started raising rates in October of 2021, they said, all right, we're going to start raising rates now. We're going to start pulling back. We're not going to be quantitative easing. We're not going to be purchasing bonds on the market, but we're not going to be selling bonds on the market. So we're beginning the pullback from making it too easy. And every meeting that they've had, they've said what we're going to do the next meeting. They've said in lots of public ways. And yet every time they have a new meeting and do exactly what they have been proclaiming to the world that they were going to do, the market acts like they've been slapped on the side of the face and are totally shocked by this. This is one of my great amusements. And nobody likes to see the market go down. That includes me. But really, when it comes straight to it, the shock that is portrayed by the people of the market, it is, I don't know, I used to drive on the way to work by a herd of fainting goats. And as I would come around the corner every day, and I couldn't avoid it, I had to do it every day, I would honk my horn. And some days, one or two of them would fall down and faint. And other days, if I got them just right, if it was quiet enough and the fog was good, they would all fall down. And it was amazing, and I loved it. And I get that same feeling every time the Federal Reserve does exactly what it says it was going to do, and the market reacts. Because it's like, come on, guys. But they never will. The market never will, because as a whole, the majority of people in the stock market aren't paying attention to what the Federal Reserve says they're going to do, but only what they say they did. So that's a tiny little fractional piece of humor. I know it's dark humor. It is definitely gallows humor when the market drops, but it's still something that causes me to have some degree of amusement regularly. We've got all kinds of other stuff going on in the world. Number one, the EU looks like they're going to whole hog sign up for that 15% corporate minimum tax. That means that the global deal across 137 countries is moving forward. That every one of these 137 companies are going to agree that the lowest tax that they are going to allow on large companies will be 15%. Why is this important? Well, when you find out about things like what happened with the crypto trading exchange FTX, and they're sitting over in the Bahamas. Why are they in the Bahamas? Why were they in Hong Kong before that? Why are they moving around? Why the Bahamas? Well, I think we all know. We can know this because there are so many companies that have their addresses for their corporate headquarters listed in some tropical island or in Ireland or in fill in the blank, where the country has decided that they're not going to get any corporate taxes, or not much, because their country doesn't have a lot of major corporations. So they say, well, it doesn't cost us anything to lower taxes on corporations. It's going to make us money because corporations will flock to our location and set up their headquarters here. The problem with their headquarters being there is it's a figment of everyone's imagination. When a major Fortune 500 corporation sets up an office in a little tropical island and its office is composed of a post office box, there's actually no people in that box. You can look. You can put your ear to it. You hear no one talking. There's no physical real estate anywhere on the island that belongs to the corporation, but somehow that corporation is based there so that they have their taxes go through it. Well, that's a problem. Because what it really means is that a major corporation can be doing business in the United States and not pay taxes in the appropriate way. Not that major corporations based in the United States necessarily pay the correct amount of taxes either, but this is a bit more egregious. This is much more obvious. So 137 of the major countries of the world got together and said, we're going to impose a minimum on all of us agree, a minimum of 15% tax on large companies, and that way we will stop this horrible thing where countries are just taking advantage of us and so on. Why am I bringing this up? It's not like I am happy that corporations have to pay taxes. It's not like I'm sad that corporations have to pay taxes. I'm bringing it up because it's going to change the work environment for a lot of major corporations. My thought is if you have a legal method of paying lower taxes, you should probably pay the lower tax if it's legal. Now, some of the legal ways of paying lower taxes are definitely unethical, and I tend to lean on being an ethical person, but now you have a quandary where you can do a thing legally and pay less money. It may be unethical, but it's unethical to whom? Well, that corporations generally do not have consciences, so having an ethical conversation with a corporation, unless there's a regulator involved, generally doesn't work. So this is why the governments are going out and saying we have a minimum rate. And that means that some of your prices may increase. Probably not very many of your prices will increase based on this. This is a rare instance where a major company is really taking advantage of this. They have other ways of taking advantage of it, usually with armies of attorneys and tax preparers in whatever country of origin, doing whatever they can to avoid paying taxes. Anyway, I think I've kicked that dog enough. What do you have as far as your next subject? We've got to play some commercials in the very near future.
We can go with the commercials right now and come back on the other side.
Do you want to give us something to bring the audience back when we leave?
Well, we've got some interesting cross currents going in the economy right now, and there are major cross currents going, but they actually make a lot of sense if you look at the big picture and you realize what's actually going on beneath the surface in the economy. And once you look at these cross currents and realize that we're probably coming back to stability before too long.
Awesome. All right. So we'll be back on the other side. We've got China to talk about. We've got layoffs and financial firms.
Consumer price index.
Inflation. All kinds of good stuff. And in the meantime, though, if you'd like to join the conversation, our email addresses in here are jeff@tpwc.com and jake at tpwc.com. That's Tango, Papa, Whiskey, Charlie, or The Personal Wealth Coach. And we'll be back on the other side of these very important announcements. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jake and
Jeff McClure.
And we have lots to talk to you about, obviously. We've got, is the economy heading for a recession? What does that mean for the market? One of the things that I hear regularly, and I have to be clear on this, I hear this confusion often. People not understanding the difference between a bear market and a recession. So I thought I would bring this up. This is a piece of information it's one of those oddities of life. That what is a bear market? Why is it called a bear market? And what is a recession? A bear market is when the stock market, or any market for that matter, drops about 20% from the top. It's called a bear market because in ancient medieval times, when weather was really bad and your crops didn't do well and your livestock were not doing well, the wild creatures of the forest were also not doing particularly well. And so they would come out of the forest and attack the flocks. So you would have people go around and capture the bears. They would bring the bears to market for bear baiting. So dogs would fight them, there'd be dancing bears, you'd have all of the stuff around that. And that happened a lot more in bad economic conditions. In good economic conditions, the weather's been good, there's plenty of feed for the animals, there's plenty of crops being harvested. You have too many bulls. We only started making steers in the last several hundred years as a normal, regular event. Before that, you had an extra bull, you would take it to get slaughtered because that's the only thing you only need one bull in your herd. So in good years, you'd bring a lot of bulls to the market. And there's still markets that do that. Spain is famous for the running of the bulls. This is a bull market. And the reason why it's such a big festival is it's kind of like Thanksgiving or harvest festival. If you bring a lot of bulls, it means that you must have done well. Now, it doesn't mean that anymore. It just means there's a lot of bulls there. But that's where we get the bull and the bear in the market. The bull is a good year. The bear is a bad year. The bull, in this case, is when the market's up from the bottom 20%. The bear is when the market's down from the top 20%. Now, will everyone agree on that definition? Probably not. But that's okay. It's a rough agreement that sort of most people kind of agree with. Okay, now we have, what's a recession? A recession has zero to do with the stock market. It has to do with the growth or shrinkage of the economy. A recession is when the economy moves backwards. It recedes. It's no longer just growing slowly. You can have high growth, slow growth, no growth, and then recession when you're moving backward. And when we're talking about recessions, I said the market has nothing to do with it, except that we've never had a recession without the market going into a bear first, having a drop first. Now, we've had a lot of bears that didn't lead to a recession, but we've never had a recession without a bear. So that kind of will help you when people say we're in a bear, but we might not have a recession. Hopefully, you're less confused with that now than you were, if you were confused at all. So moving forward from that, when a recession occurs, the stock market is also usually already in recovery at that point. It's already beginning its climb back up. Why is that? This is one of those things when we talk about indicators being leading or lagging or concurrent. happening at the same time. A leading indicator is something, obviously, that is an indication of something before it happens. A barometric pressure is a leading indicator of a storm. The yield curve has been an indicator, leading indicator of recessions in the past. It's a strong indicator. It doesn't mean that there has to be a recession every time we have an inverted yield curve. A bear market is a strong leading indicator, but it doesn't always mean that there's a recession. When we look at the U.S. leading indicators, the Conference Board puts this out. And when we look at this, there's only just a few of the indicators, really only one, a couple of them are kind of waffling right on the edge, that are saying there's growth ahead. So the interest rate spread on the 10-year T-bonds is a leading indicator, and it's a little bit ahead right now. With the yield curve inverted, that's a little weird. So what makes a leading indicator? Why is it leading? Why is the stock market ahead? A lagging indicator would be employment. Well, you would think, if employment's good, wouldn't that say good things about the economy? Well, yeah, but it says about what's already occurred. If you put yourself in the shoes of a small business owner, by the way, I would request that you ask the small business owner before you take their shoes. Don't just take them and put them on. That leads to all kinds of arguments. So let's figuratively put the shoes of a small business owner on. You've been doing well this year. You have a lot of demand for new things to be made and so on. So you start looking around to hire someone, but you don't start hiring people until you have profits. When the profits are there and the orders are there and they say, we want you to give us stuff and we will pay you money for it, then people hire. It happens after the promise of profits or after the profits already occur. And the opposite is also true. People don't lay people off. They don't fire their employees, the ones that they have been training and spending money on to get them up to speed. You don't get rid of them until you have a pretty good reason to believe that your profits are down, generally after they've been down for a while. So layoffs tend to occur way after the thing that caused the profits to drop. And hiring tends to occur way after the profits are up. So those are lagging indicators. The stock market is made up of a bunch of people that are looking at the market and they're trying to buy things that they expect to do well in the future. So they are actively trying to look ahead to see what's happening there. And on average, it's a pretty good indicator of good or bad things for the future. So that's a really kind of very fast breakdown of, number one, what's a recession? Number two, what's a bear market? What's a bull market? What's the difference? And I have heard some very astute journalists at financial networks that are on television and online that have millions of people listening to them getting the recession or the market and the economy completely mixed up. Absolutely, totally backwards by saying the economy is in a bear market. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Or the market is in a recession. Well, no, that's not how that works either. And I've heard it so many times that I wanted to bring it out and say, look, this is a common misconception. The market is an indicator for the economy. You can have a down market and a good economy. You can have a bad economy and an up market. In fact, those are normal situations. So when we look ahead at the indicators, the yield curves and so on, there's no doubt in either of our bald brains that the global economy is heading into recession. The big question is, will the United States join it? Will the United States be in a recession in the next 18 months? And I would say there's a better than 50-50 chance, but I don't think it's going to be 18 months out. I don't think it's going to be a massive recession or a horrible one because we're sitting on so much cash and our employment is so high and has been for so long. So that's some of the quibble points that I needed to bring out there just because enough people are confused by it. And we do have a question that's come in late in the hour. We don't have enough time to take it this hour from Inquisitor John. And his question, I'll read it out before we break for the hour. Historically, what are the impacts of recessions on individuals' psychology toward investing? That is a fantastic question. I love that question, but we're going to have to answer it next hour. Do you have anything you want to say right before we break?
No, I still want to talk about the macroeconomic issues, but we don't have enough time, so we'll talk about it next hour.
Okay. If you would like to talk to us off the air, we have voicemail available during the weekend locally at
254-947-1111.
And that voicemail is only on the weekends and evenings. We have real live people that answer the phone normally, and you can reach it toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, where you can, or tpwc.com, where you can see our made-for-radio faces, read our newsletters, sign up for the newsletter, listen to radio programs going back lots of years, listen to bite-sized podcasts that go back quite a long ways, too. You can also find those podcasts anywhere where podcasts are provided. You can contact us through our contact form there or email us directly at jeff at tpwc.com and or jake at tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.